May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Christina Maddock, and I represent the defendant, appellant in this case, Tremaine White. Mr. White requests that his case be reversed for a new trial based on two pieces of evidence that were improperly admitted by the district court: the note found in the defendant's rental vehicle, which the government alleges was used in the bank robbery, and the lay witness identification testimony by Mr. White's sister and girlfriend identifying him from the bank surveillance photos. The note found in the defendant's rental vehicle should have been excluded by the trial court because it was not properly authenticated under Federal Rule of Evidence 901. It was not properly authenticated because the bank teller, Jessica Alarcon, could not identify this note as the note that was, in fact, used in the bank robbery.
Well, even if the note was not the robbery note, the teller testified that she did see a note. It stated that the robber had a weapon and that the robber pointed to his waistband as if to indicate he had a weapon. Isn't that enough to find the enhancement applies?
For the sentencing enhancement or for the note's admission?
Well, for admission. For admission.
To admit the note at trial, no, we would argue that that is not sufficient.
Since it was found, right? It was found in the rental car, the note.
It was found in the rental car. However, it was established at trial that Mr. White was not the only individual that had access to the rental car. And, in fact, it was found in the rental car several weeks after the alleged robbery had taken place. In that way, the present case is distinguishable from cases such as Harvey, where the defendant was the only person ever seen in the area and the only person who could have written the documents in question.
Where was the rental car during the 7 weeks?
It was...
Was it impounded?
It was impounded upon his arrest, which was numerous days.
So I assume it's in police custody.
I assume so, too, yes. Okay. That is correct. But it was several days from the date of the alleged robbery until Mr. White's arrest, at which time the car was seized and was impounded. And there was, I believe, testimony at trial which stated that Mr. White's sister and other individuals had also had access to that vehicle.
Nobody's claiming it was just a rough draft.
What?
It wasn't the final document he presented.
I don't believe that that argument was ever raised, Your Honor. The government asserts in their brief and sought to make the inference at trial that this was, in fact, the note that was used in the U.S. bank robbery. They stated that repeatedly throughout their briefing, and I don't believe challenged that assertion that that was the purpose for which they admitted the note. If the note was admitted for a different purpose, Mr. White would argue that the only purpose that the note could have been admitted for was to show his propensity to commit criminal activities or to rob banks. If the note is not tied directly to the U.S. bank robbery, which would have need to have been done through the testimony of Ms. Alarcon, the note becomes irrelevant, or at the very least should have been excluded under 403. In addition to not being able to establish that Mr. White had control of the car exclusively or that Mr. White ever authored the note, further evidence was provided to show that there were no fingerprints on the note, no handwriting analysis was ever done, and nothing tied that note directly to the robbery at U.S. Bank. In fact, when the bank teller was initially shown the note by the police, she stated that she did not think that that was the note that was used because she didn't remember it looking that way. Based on all of this evidence, we can't say that this note was properly authenticated under the contents and locations, such as the documents in either Mokel or in DiGaudino, the cases decided by this court. Furthermore, in DiGaudino, this court precisely left open the ability of the defendant to rebut the government's assertion that the note was, in fact, what it purported to be. In DiGaudino, when holding that the evidence was admissible, this court stated that had the defendant presented any evidence to rebut the assertion that the documents in question were the documents from the conspiracy, that the court very well may have made a different decision. And that is precisely what happened in this case. The government presented the evidence that the note was found in the rental car and that it looked like it might have been involved in some sort of criminal activity, and the defendant rebutted that evidence by having the testimony of Ms. Alarcon, who stated that this was not, in fact, the note that was used in the robbery, or that at best, she didn't know. As such, it was not properly authenticated, and it should not have been admitted. Even if you determine that the authentication of the note was proper, the note should have been excluded as more prejudicial than probative under Federal Rule of Evidence 403. For all of the reasons that I've just discussed, the ties of this note to the case at hand are tenuous at best, and therefore the probative value of this piece of evidence would have been low. The prejudicial impact, however, is extremely high.
Well, let me just get the dates right, because the robbery takes place December 26th.
Correct,
Your Honor. Right? And then the car is seized on December 29th.
Correct.
So we're just talking a period of maybe 3 days when someone else could have planted a note or whatever.
Correct. It was not actually discovered until, I believe it was January 12th.
Right,
but the car was
seized
on the 29th.
That whole time it was in custody.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure I had the dates correct.
Under Federal Rule of Evidence 403, the note should have been excluded based on its high prejudicial impact. As already discussed, both in the briefs and this morning, because the government could not prove that this was the note used in the U.S. bank robbery, and in fact couldn't raise sufficient evidence to draw that inference, given the testimony of Ms. Alarcon, the prejudicial impact of the note is extremely high. The only purpose that the note could have been used for was propensity or character of the defendant. When the court admitted the note below, stating it was going to admit it regardless of whether it was the note used in the bank robbery, the court erred. The court should only have admitted the note if it had determined under Federal Rule of Evidence 901 that there was sufficient evidence to indicate that it was the note used in the U.S. bank robbery. By admitting the note as a note that the defendant had simply written or perhaps from another instance, the court committed error under 403 by admitting a very prejudicial piece of evidence that had very little probative value.
Of course, when we make that determination, even if we agreed with you it was error, the evidence here was overwhelming that he was the one. When you look at where the money was, the statements that he made, the identifications by the sister, by the girlfriend, I mean, we have to weigh that prejudicial impact in light of all the evidence that was presented. And I realize you have some quarrel with the two witnesses that did the identification, but
correct.
That's all the evidence we have, lots of evidence.
However, Your Honor, we would assert that the admission of the note into evidence was not harmless error in this case. That piece of evidence, we would argue, would likely have been in the forefront of the jury's mind when considering whether or not to convict Mr. White. And while and as this court knows, the standard for harmless error is whether the prosecution's case would have been substantially less persuasive without the admission of that piece of evidence. We would argue that the case absolutely to the average juror would have been substantially less persuasive without that admission of that piece of evidence, because the jurors likely would have, even though the prosecution did not present significant evidence to show this, concluded that if they were being shown this note in the context of a robbery trial, that it was in fact the note used. That's not an irrelevant piece of evidence, and we would argue that in fact it's incredibly both prejudicial and would not have been harmless error. Had the note not been admitted, I don't think that we can state that the jury would still have convicted Mr. White. We would argue that that's an incredibly important piece of evidence. And
even though the robbery was captured on the surveillance tape and he was identified by his sister and by the friend.
Yes, Your Honor. We would argue that that is still highly prejudicial and still not harmless error based on the fact. Furthermore, with the sister and the girlfriend's identifications, we argue that those also should not have been admitted under Federal Rule of Evidence 701 because they were not helpful to the jury. There was no evidence that the jury could not have simply looked at the pictures in the videotape and looked at the defendant and drawn their own conclusions. And as this court has stated repeatedly in both Jackson and Towns, lay opinion testimony under 701 is only admissible if there is some reason to think that the facts underlying that opinion cannot be explained to the jury. And I see
wasn't there some claim, though, that maybe it was Uncle Bill who robbed? And the girls would certainly say, no, that isn't Uncle Bill.
And had the testimony have been, is the individual depicted in the testimony your uncle, we would have much less of an objection.
Well,
however, that was not.
I don't know where Uncle Bill came into this. It's just that somebody, he had access to the money or something.
Correct.
Whatever, he lived in the same place and got some of the money or something. I don't know all the details here, but I thought there was some reference that maybe he was the robber.
Yeah, wasn't that actually White's theory at trial, that the uncle committed the robbery?
The theory at trial that was raised was that the uncle or someone else had committed the robbery and not Mr. White. We would argue that that does not, however, correct the testimony under 701, that the testimony identifying specifically Mr. White as the man in the photograph was not helpful to the jury, and in fact usurped the role of the jury, because the jury could have compared the appearance of Mr. White at trial to the appearance of the photos and drawn their own conclusions,
all right,
regardless of the testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Maddox.
Thank you.
Mr. Garner?
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Mark Garner. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Northern District of Illinois Western Division. I was also one of the prosecutors who tried the case before the district court. We asked that the court affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence. Going right to the note, the demand note was properly authenticated. It was authenticated, first of all, based on the testimony of the method in which the bank robbery was committed, specifically the teller's description of having the note slid across the counter and then retrieved after the bank robbery. When you compare the bank teller's description of the note with the note that was recovered from the defendant's car, the descriptions are almost identical. The teller described the demand note as being on lined notebook paper, and it had a fringed edge as if it had been torn out of a spiral notebook. The demand note recovered from the defendant's car matched that description. When the teller skimmed the demand note, the teller noticed that the first information she learned was that the bank robber had a weapon of some sort. The demand note recovered from the defendant's car starts, "I have a gun." The teller described that the demand note requested all the money in her drawer. The demand note found from the defendant's car instructed her to give the robber all the money in the register. The teller described being cautioned or warned not to give any dye packs. The note recovered from the defendant's car said no dye packs, no silent alarms, and no one will get hurt, do it quickly. So the method of the bank robbery, the description of the note, the location of the note in the defendant's car, and the court is correct, the car was seized December 29th on the day of the arrest. It was in the continuous custody of the impound garage until it was actually searched in January.
Now, the government didn't have the handwriting analyzed. Why is that?
Your Honor,
that's in the record.
I don't know that it was in the record, and well, I'm sorry, I'll leave it at that.
All right.
Okay. Moving next, then, to the issue of the identifications. Both the identification was the sole issue in dispute at the trial, and it was the defendant's theory that the defendant's uncle and his sister's uncle, William Cole, was the one who truly committed the bank robbery in this case. Both the testimony of the girlfriend, former girlfriend, and the defendant's sister was helpful on the issue of identification. There's only two means by which the defendant could have been identified, either by the teller, which he was, and by the bank surveillance system, because there was no other employee behind the counter. And so their testimony was helpful towards the issue of identification. But specifically, both the girlfriend and the sister were familiar with the defendant's uncle, William Cole, and their identification of the defendant and not William Cole from the surveillance video implicitly refutes their theory of the case. For these reasons, we ask the court to affirm the conviction and sentence of the defendant, and unless the court has any questions for me, I'll sit down.
Any questions?
Thank you.
All right, you were appointed?
Yes.
All right, we thank you for your fine representation of your client, your brief, your oral argument. Thank you, counsel, for your fine performance as always. We'll take the case under advisement, and court will stand in recess.